All right, I don't know what time it is on your clock, but I know what I'm getting ready for. It is time for the Professional CISO Podcast with David Malico.
Welcome, one and all, to the Professional CISO Podcast. I'm your host, David Malico. This show is an exploration of the topics necessary to professionalize the role of the CISO. Today, we have an interview with a financial services security leader. He has extensive experience in all facets of cybersecurity, technology, risk, and operations. He serves as an advisor to multiple technology companies, as well as an active member of the venture capital community. Notable things about him, he coaches youth basketball with his kids. He volunteers in his community extensively, and he sits on the board of a local high school that serves underserved communities, and it's called Cristo Rey Fort Worth College Prep. So before we begin, I do want to talk about one thing. We have a huge announcement. So Digital Fight Club is back. So this time it's going to be a cybersecurity specific. So we're talking season one, episode one. So what does that mean to you? We're talking Hollywood, folks. So the folks out from LA are coming into town at on June 27th at the Granada Theater. And so what we're doing is bringing it in. It's going to be trimmed down a little bit. So instead of five fights, we're going to have three fights. Instead of five referees, we're going to have three referees. But again, we're shooting for a nationwide prime time show here. Okay. So just want everybody to know we're having it at the birthplace of Digital Fight Club, which again, the Granada Theater down on Lower Greenville. And what I'll do is I'll link the promo video to the show notes here. Just let everybody know that it's out, it's coming, and get ready because it's going to be big. Also, I want to do some shout outs. So we've had a couple of sponsors that have believed in us from the beginning, or actually prior to the beginning, quite honestly. And the first one is Interpret Security. The founder is Nick Lanta, CEO. There, Michael Jenks, the CTO, Ian Roth, head of product. These guys, they're doing some pretty good stuff in the CTEM area. They're an intelligence layer they stitch all the information together there for CTEM. They're doing great work out there. Appreciate that they supported us from the beginning. So check them out. Also, ContraForce, CEO Stan Golubchik and CTO Ricky Melendez. These guys are out there. Again, great stuff that they're doing. They're doing hyper automation for your security operations. So they're targeting the MSP and MSSP space, but again, I've seen them in common regular companies, for lack of a better way to put it. Again, if you want to take that time from take that response time down, check these guys out. They're doing a great job over there as well. All right, now let's talk about being a professional CISO. In today's episode, our guest is Ryan Bachman, currently Executive Vice President and Global Chief Information Security Officer at General Motors Financial. He has held previously positions at PwC, Scottrade, Deloitte, and AT&T. Please welcome Ryan Bachman.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Awesome. So, Ryan, what I like to do at the beginning is to give folks some flavor about Mr. Ryan Bachman, which is, so we all have our journeys, right? So I always like to get folks to start when they're maybe even as a kid or a teen or something like that. Kind of talk to me about how tech hits you early and then talk me through the arc, you know, 1 to 2 minutes into today.
Sure, absolutely. Well, I'm the youngest of five kids. I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, and I watched what my brothers and sisters did. And my oldest brother was the one that picked on me the least. And so I followed him around quite a bit. And he was always very interested in technology. So it started out, again, this is the 1980s, started out with, you know, complex stereo systems and putting things like that together. Even just always had a bend towards the mechanical and technical, working on cars, things like that. But then, you know, as home PCs kind of came onto to the forefront, really watching him become engaged with those and being very interested in what he was doing. So that I think was probably what tilted me towards that. And then, of course, into my early teenage years and the advent of bulletin board systems and things like that, and getting involved in those at probably too young of an age, and tinkering around and figuring out what I could do with my modem, all the way through going into high school and you know, dealing with more advanced computer systems, and even to some extent getting introduced to these notions of networking and things like that, which really sort of led me into college. And you know, sort of during the height of the tech bubble, tech boom, and the need and demand for more and more tech focused workers, and a desire to want to be one of the people who was building things. And early on, it was building software, developing software at a company like AT&T, which at that point in time, the forefront of doing that was on the web application side, building things that customers could use to perform functions, to automate business, and to purchase products. So that was a pretty exciting place to be on the early part of my career. And as they say, the rest is kind of history.
Yeah, love it. So do you find on that journey that you, did anything pull through that for you? Like, is it radically different now for you where you're at the level that you're at? Or is there, do you still have the kind of that fundamental that stays there?
Sure. I think the desire to be on the forefront of technology and understanding how things work and how technology could be used to solve problems and to automate businesses and do things like that was always very interesting to me, because it always felt like you know, that was an area that maybe not as many people understood, and that was an area that just seemed more intriguing, seemed more dynamic, seemed more exciting. And so I think that pull through, if you will, continues to today, because ultimately, if I look at what really drives me, it's helping solve problems. It's dealing with complexity and figuring out a way through it. And I think technology plays a huge part in that. And I think security lends itself to that. So that's really what kind of drew me towards that direction, and what I feel like resonates today.
Excellent. Yeah. I appreciate that another CISO perspective, but also from a technician. I grew up as a Unix system administrator, so yeah. You know, I wasn't necessarily the developer side, but yeah, I mean, it's the, I always tell people I can appreciate what folks are going through when they're on the keyboard, right? And so you never, hopefully never lose that connection.
Absolutely. And I just, to be completely honest, I think I was so tech focused at the start of my career, and then I was very tech focused in the middle of my career. And then I thought to myself, well, I need to expand beyond just tech. I need to become more operationally and business aware and build that business acumen. And in some ways, I almost kind of fought being seen as the tech-driven person, and I wanted to be seen more as a business-driven person. And then I realized, look, this is what my roots go back to. This is what I've always been interested in, and it's helped me be successful at year-to-four. So really, instead of leaving one behind and going towards the other, I said, absolutely not. I'm going to take that tech background and that foundation, try to advance it forward, and couple it with that business acumen.
So the CISO role, it's changing and at a rapid pace, I think. So the reason I started this podcast, called it Professional CISO, and that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, I think. So do you feel like these new demands on the CISO role, what are they to you? Like, from where when you started, like, what has that arc been? But then what does that future hold? Are we on the right path? What does that path look like? What, to Ryan Bachman, where is the CISO at, and where do we need to go?
Sure. So I think if you look back at a CISO role, maybe going back 10 or even 15 years. I know some people can go back longer, but at least for me, consulting with lots of different companies, also spending a good amount of time in industry, you really started to see that role sort of hit the mainstream. I would say maybe 2004, 5, 6, somewhere in that time frame. You started to see it more often. Now, I know Charles Blonner would disagree with me. He's giving me a hard time about that because he's an OG CISO. But and props to him, but absolutely this whole notion is, I think that it's evolved, and I think early on, if you look at CIO type roles, a lot of times they were just sort of seen as the person who could solve one problem or just one area of problems. they didn't necessarily have a table, or I'm sorry, a seat at the table of executives. And over time, you saw that that CIO role had more of a value proposition. And now the CIO role sits very prominently among other C-suite roles, is seen as driving not just technology service delivery, but data, innovation, all these other things. And I think you've seen a similar type of evolution with CISO. And I think we're in the middle of that evolution. Yeah. So it's by no means as mature as the CIO role, but I think it's getting there. And I think, you know, what was earlier seen as, hey, you're a CISO or director of security or fill in the blank and the head of security, your job is to run application security and network security and endpoint security. And oh gosh, I guess now we have to worry about policies and that's about it. I think it's most certainly evolved beyond that to where now CISOs are being included and have a very prominent role on new product launches, on establishment of new business operations in different geographical locales, certainly on the divestiture or winding down of business in certain geographical locales, or for that matter, the winding down of a business or product unit. So all of these more strategic decisions, M&A type discussions, CISOs are very much involved in. So I think that that scope of where cybersecurity risk and impact has done nothing but grown, and they need somebody who has that understanding, that acumen, I think that's where you've really started to see that CISO position evolve. Obviously, with all of the discussion and interest at the board level, that certainly hasn't hurt things. But to me, I think that it's truly earned that position among the C-suite, certainly earned that position among the board, and probably very much to the credit of the board and boards of different companies taking an interest, an active interest in that role. Because again, you're talking about managing a massive amount of risk, something that can materially impact operations, has significant impacts on customers. You know, those are macro issues that executive C-suites are very much on the front of and want to deal with.
So speaking of boards and constituents inside an organization,
sure.
What I have found, so I'll take the leap a little bit. I'll say the thing that may be a little more sensational. I think there's a disconnect. There's an outsized amount of technology being used, but maybe not necessarily an outsized amount of understanding of what people understand that technology risk to be.
Okay.
Right? So we got this. That's our role, but we're not in a place where we're able to go ahead and communicate it well, or have the opportunity to even communicate it potentially. So how, as a practitioner coming up, getting into a leadership position, or even further, you know, you're going director, senior director into maybe that first CISO role, can you talk what, from your perspective, not specifically with General Motors Financial, but just generally, what would you recommend that these folks do relative to being able to communicate, we use a lot of tech, I'm not seeing a lot of understanding around the technical risks that you guys, that the constituents are seeing. How do you implement that? How do you communicate that? How do you begin to change yourself, right, from a technician all the way through and saying, now I'm going to communicate risk to you, to really somebody that doesn't understand it very well?
Well, I want to touch on the last thing you said there, which was communicating risk to somebody who doesn't understand it very well. I think technologists across the board, whether they're CIOs, CTOs, or CISOs, need to give more credit to the other business executive stakeholders that they're dealing with. These are really intelligent people for the most part. Obviously, there's anomalies always, but for all intents and purposes, let's assume that you're dealing with somebody who is a critical thinker, who's an expert in their particular field, okay? You trust them to know their area right. Well, they need to trust you to know your area and to know your expertise. If you want to get down into derivative security, and if you want to get down into the nuances of, currency swaps and different things like that, you know, that's probably not an area that your average CISO is going to understand very well, but you're going to trust that the CFO or treasurer really understands that area and has a very good understanding of that. You have to have that same confidence of your executive peer group when, as it relates to cybersecurity. you get that by understanding that no one is an expert in everything, but you better at least be able to speak the language and understand where they're coming from and help it make sense to them. So how I discuss cybersecurity risk to a CIO might be different, not 100% different, but might be a little bit different than how I discuss it with a CFO or chief operating officer, because I understand the goals and objectives and the things that are important to that chief operating officer or that CFO. You know, if I speak to her about that particular risk, I may think about it in the context of what's this going to cost us? What's this going to take? Is it going to save us money? Is it going to help us better manage risk? Now, I may not talk about those other three things with the CIO. I may talk more about the how we're going to manage the risk. But if I can use it in terms that make sense to what that CFO or what that COO is most concerned with, I think that that's going to help build rapport and build trust. But also, I found that really effective executives, and if I look at CFOs, CEOs that I've worked closely with, they're really intelligent people, and they don't want to be clueless on a subject. They go out and they'll have a backing or group of people that they also trust that might have cybersecurity expertise. So as a CISO, I should expect that they have people in their social circles and their networks that have cybersecurity expertise, and that they are bouncing my perspectives and the guidance and advice that I'm giving off of them. So let's I think, start by giving credit to non-traditional technologists is probably being a lot sharper and having a lot better knowledge than maybe their predecessors from 20 or 30 or 40 years ago. I think many of these individuals either grew up and became comfortable with technology, or have made it a point on their own through their own research, through their own efforts, to become a lot sharper on those topics than what maybe they're usually given credit for.
So if, because I'm going to key off of one thing that you said there, which is as we go through the different constituents or the different stakeholders, maybe that's a different language, let's say, just for instance.
Sure.
Wanted to say something else there. But, so for instance, maybe each one's a different, or a different dialect even, maybe, let's say. Does that make us translators? Is that a case where we're having to speak in a little bit different language depending on who we're speaking to? Is that the goal? Is that where we need to get to?
I think so, but I wouldn't shy away from leaving some of the complexity entirely behind, because I think you have to know your audience. If the body language and or verbal language coming back to you suggests that they really don't want to go into those details, okay, pivot back to the areas that they are comfortable with or that they prefer. Okay, so if I can speak about cyber risk in the context of IP theft, if I can think about it in the context of denial of service and compliance risk and a lot of these other things, then I should be able to quantify or translate that into what the operational impact would be, what the financial impact would be, what the reputational impact could be, and also be very honest about the likelihood. And I think that those are the types of things that will resonate with different stakeholders. But again, I think you'll find that a lot of executives want to feel comfortable, and some have no problem telling you that they understand what you're talking about, or they're going to take what you told them and they're going to go dig on it and make sure that as part of building that trust that they feel comfortable and confident in the advice and direction that you're giving them. So altering the message, of course, it's the old fashioned, you have to know your audience. I just hesitate to say, because my experience with executives, not just at my company, but at other companies too, I think that they're due much more credit than what some technologists would be willing to give. You know, the days of they just don't get it, they just don't understand.
Right.
That's not the right answer.
It's a crutch.
They do understand. The problem, quite frankly, is more the CISO who has an inability to be able to effectively communicate and translate, if we want to use your word, what that risk is, what that impact to business operations is, and make sure that you're giving data-driven assertions.
All right, gang, I want to take a moment to talk to you about this episode's sponsor, Valence Security. We all contribute to the SaaS security problem. Have you recently connected an AI tool to Google Calendar or Slack? Or shared a file by enabling anyone with the link to open it? With SaaS tools managed by different teams in your organization, your IT team can't see everything. This is where Valence Security comes in. Valence provides SaaS security posture management and remediation capabilities that enable companies to find and fix your SaaS risks. From misconfigurations and identity risks to third-party integrations, Valence has you covered. Easily reduce your attack surface with automated workflows and business user collaboration. Secure your SaaS. Visit valencesecurity.com.
So one of the things, because I listened to a lot of other podcasts, because the whole point of this was I was trying to go find more information.
Yeah.
And I didn't find it really. And right. So, you know, what better way than to get smart people in a room and start asking them questions, and then you get smarter yourself. In this case, there's always kind of this idea that, like you said, it's almost like they're meeting you halfway. Is your experience, like your constituents, your stakeholders, they actually meet you halfway. It's not a case of I'm yelling into the void, or I'm just, something's getting lost in translation. That's not really what's going on. You have to trust that you are getting through to them, but also you need to tune, is what I'm hearing, your communication style to make sure that you're hitting it home, and that's on you.
Of course.
Like any other good executive. So it's not special to a CISO.
To me, you just hit the nail on the head. Those are broader executive skills that are transferable amongst executives, effective executive leaders. So the ability to effectively communicate is as important to the general in the military as it is to the CEO, as it is to the CFO when they're speaking to investors, shareholders alike. These are really important things, and you have to be able to effectively communicate in a way that's meaningful for them and that's going to resonate with them and is going to build trust and transparency. Those are critical things. And for the CISO role, it's really no different. So instead of, you know, a CISO role of, you know, maybe the early 2000s of being a role that was really more managing the team and leading the technology solutioning, this role has grown to where you need to be able to certainly do all of those things, but so much more.
And in our prep call that we had the other day, you'd said something and it hit home, but it goes right into what we're talking about, which is awesome, which I love. And it wasn't set up by any stretch of the imagination.
Sure.
So you talked about building your brand inside your organization.
Sure.
Right. And I think leveraging off just this last 5-10 minutes. So perspective on that, it can be seen maybe sometimes, or feel like sometimes, that you're out there just kind of, you know, being kind of a marketing for yourself.
Yeah.
But it's necessary, is it not? I mean, talk to me about building your brand inside the organization in the midst of how the CISO role is growing and changing.
Sure. When I think about the most successful executives that I've had the privilege to work with, and certainly the ones that I follow that I haven't had the privilege to work with, but I aspire to, it's very rarely about them. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's very rarely about, look at how great I am. Look at how smart I am. Look at the certifications I have. Look at the degrees that I have, look at the training that I have, or anything along those lines. I think ultimately it comes down to human nature, and you think to yourself, okay, how can I build trust? That's what we're talking about here. We're talking about this notion of a brand, this notion of being able to be trusted, okay? It's not about, hey, look at how shiny and smart somebody is. It's more about, okay, how can you depend on me? How can you trust me to give you the right advice and to help you be successful? Okay. If I think about successful CFOs, you know, the ones that I work with now, the ones that I worked with over the years, these are individuals who are very smart, to be sure. And they have much to brag about, quite frankly, but they don't. What they focus on is, how can I help others be successful? How can I help enable what it is that we're trying to get done? So if I think about, as a CISO, how do I want to build my brand? I want to build my brand by helping other people solve their problems, by helping other people move forward with that new product, that new business, that new initiative, that project, whatever it is, how can I help them do that securely? It's not a matter of how can I make them think that security is the most important thing ever, because it's not.
It's not.
It you know, sorry, but it's not.
Spoiler alert.
Right. But if you take that approach that security trumps all, you know, that's a pretty naive approach. I think it just comes back to, I'm not a marketing specialist. I don't have any background in marketing, and frankly, I'm not comfortable, you know, focusing only on marketing. I think it's important, but I want to, if I'm going to market something, I'm going to market the fact that, you know, here's how I can help you solve whatever it is you're trying to do. What's important to you? How can we better serve you? What have been your pain points? Where have we fallen short? Where have we not been able to do what you needed us to do? How can I do it more efficiently? How can I do it more effectively? How can I be less of a roadblock? But at the same time, deliver on the mission that you need me to, so that all of us, you know, can meet our goals and objectives.
And that's all, everything you're saying is outbound.
Right. Right?
It's not, there's not an inbound. And I think maybe that's part of it. By building your brand, a lot of people think it's all about me potentially, or that it could feel that way. But I think there's the ability, and I think you nailed it with the trust, right? What's the first thing you do in any organization? You try to build trust as rapidly as possible, but authentically as possible.
Right.
And so the ability to say, what can I do for you? I mean, I think people call that a lot of servant leadership as well, in a way, but to say, how can I learn more about what you're doing? How can I help you with your objectives? Like you said, everything's outbound, and none of it comes back to look how good I am, look how what we've accomplished, look like, you know, what I have done, or like you said, the skins on the wall.
David, you know what good service feels like.
Oh yeah.
You know when you get it. And, you know, when I think about, you know, things my grandparents used to say, you know, it's impossible to get good service nowadays. You know, you hear this notion, this term. To me, you know, we're in a service-driven business as cybersecurity professionals. We provide a service. Our customers inside the business, and certainly our customers that keep us in business, yes, know good service when they experience it, and they know bad service when they experience it. We have to have a service-oriented culture and service-oriented focus for customers, okay? We better know what we're talking about. But you're not going to build trust. You're going to be dead in the water. You're going to be the smartest cybersecurity person that there ever was. But if you don't provide good service, you're useless.
Right.
I think it starts with service. It doesn't end with service. And from there, people are going to know you're not in it for yourself. You're trying to make them successful. You're going to do whatever you can. You're going to do all the things like accepting accountability when you do mess up, not if, but when you do lay an egg. You're going to accept accountability for it, and you're going to make it right. No different than when you get your service at your favorite restaurant. If they spill a little bit of water on you or knock over something, if they're sincerely apologetic for it and they make it right, then all in the world is right. So I think that basic notion of service, especially in cybersecurity, is more critical than ever, because let's face it, we are injecting ourselves and being brought into situations that are more and more critical,
yep,
that have greater and greater stakes, that have higher and higher visibility in an area that is still very complex, very dynamic. And even for the most knowledgeable cybersecurity expert out there, are somewhat difficult to understand and grasp at times.
Yep. I'd say starts with service. Grows with value.
For sure.
Yeah. Love it. Okay. We're going to switch topics a little bit.
All right.
That was very philosophical. Love it. By the way, I think it's exactly where we need to be. Can't get around the tech side of things, right?
For sure.
So where does innovation fit into your world? You're in a large organization, financial. I've heard other financial organizations say that they won't even accept anything that's considered innovative because they can't. So curious of where that sits in your world, and what are your thoughts on it, and what do cybersecurity leaders need to think about when we're talking about innovation?
Well, I would shudder at the notion that an organization, financial services or otherwise, can't accept innovation because it won't fit into what they're doing. To me, that sounds like a business that's dying. I think financial services is thriving. And I certainly think financial services in the context of General Motors Financial is thriving. And I would say that innovation at General Motors is thriving. So aside from, you know, plugging my company there, I guess what I would say is I need to solve problems. To solve problems, sometimes it's easy. Sometimes you have to come up with innovative ways to do it because they're not so easy. They're complex. Because if they were easy to solve, somebody probably would have done it by now.
Right.
So in order to do that, I need to be able to attract and retain really bright people and really hardworking people and really dedicated people and people that buy into what we're trying to do. Now, if I have them come in and I have them just focus on the day in and day out, fix the operations of what we're doing, that's all very well and important. But if I want to keep them inspired and I want to keep them mission focused, they're going to need to have an opportunity to work on the leading edge of innovation. Mm-hmm. Now, we can look at what we're doing and we can try to come up with innovative ways to be more efficient or more effective. So innovation has to do one of those two things for us. We better become more efficient, or we better become more effective at managing risk, or both. Okay. So if I can have my team members come up with innovative ways, I should listen to them. However, if you look out into the marketplace, innovation is happening in startups and small companies with great ideas all over the place. And figuring out, you know, looking at necessarily legacy technology companies, oftentimes they'll go out and they'll try to bring that innovation in-house. But innovation in many ways is kind of happening out on that frontier. And so if I think about companies that are innovating, and I'll use Valence as an example. Valence is addressing a risk that we've known and basically been forced to accept for quite some time.
Okay, so for the audience.
Sure.
What is the space that Valence is in?
Sure.
So they kind of have that context as you talk about it.
Sure. So being able to give better definitive and data-driven insights into third-party SaaS software products as an example. Okay. So typically, if I couldn't look and see where there were potential security vulnerabilities and SaaS-related product offerings, that was just something we kind of had to live with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we would work with that SaaS offering and we would hope that that they were doing the things that they needed to do from a security perspective, or where they were introducing risk into our environment by virtue of us using that SaaS. Well, innovation notwithstanding, there was only so much we could do because these are two separate enterprises with two separate sets of goals. We just happen to be a customer. Well, then along comes an innovation where we can take a look and have better insights and actually get verifiable information to improve our security posture by addressing those issues. That's great. I'm getting the efficiency play. I'm getting the effective play. But on the very caliber of talent that I'm trying to attract and retain, they get the added benefit of being able to work on something that's on the leading edge of innovation within cybersecurity. And the nice part is when you look at Valence or lots of others that are out on that landscape, if you know that they're solving a problem that isn't currently being solved, but would have a material or demonstrable impact on your risk posture, if you look at that and you say, okay, I can work with them to solve the problems that we're having, let's say at a General Motors Financial or any other company out there, versus I can go buy a technology, I can shoehorn it into my company when it was built to solve problems at some other company. So what I'm referring to here, David, is this notion of a design partner.
Yes.
If you know that something works and you're able to prove that out, especially at no cost, and you know that it's going to work and you can get in at that level on the design level, it doesn't cost your company.
Right.
What it does is it allows for the solution that's being developed to solve the problems that we have inside the company, usually at a more cost-effective market price than you would get later, and also helps you retain the best talent because they get to work on cutting edge technologies. So to me, that innovation is really a partnership.
Right.
It's hiring the right type of people and being open to listening to them for how you can drive innovation, and then having the right partnerships in the marketplace and in the tech ecosystem where you can partner to help drive and bring innovation.
So as we know, there's always those kind of two sides. So what are some of the risks? Like if I'm wanting to be a design partner and really push my innovation envelope, let's say, what do I need to think about? Right? Because you've been down this path, obviously. So yeah. What are some of your lessons learned? What do you need to look out for as a CISO if you're looking to head in that innovation direction?
First and foremost, be very selective. There are lots of wonderful solutions that are out there. There are more than we would have time to even cover today, and more that I could even pretend to cover. But I think part of it comes down to building trust and understanding what problem is it that you're trying to solve, and defining milestones and objectives that have to be achieved, that have to be demonstrated and proven before you make a financial commitment. So if I like the hypothesis of the problem that you're trying to solve, hey, that's a great start. Now, who are the people involved? Can I build some level of trust with them that I believe what they're telling me? Is what they're telling me making sense? Can I and my architects and others really get in and understand the inner workings of how this works? And can I make it make sense? Does it conceptually make sense? And I don't like this notion of a proof of concept, right? But this notion of a proof of value, which is what's often used, show me that this actually works, right? And show me with no risk to my company. Show me with no risk to my pocket. So again, I don't want to give the blueprint for how everybody else should do it, but this is what's worked for me, is we can't spend all of our time looking at every single technology that's out there, but having a good network of other CISOs, having a good eye on what technologies are out there and what problems are trying to be solved, those design type partnerships where vendors are willing to do that can really provide value, provided you've got the right trust, you've conceptually understood what it is that they're trying to do and agree with how they're doing it, and you have the no risk opportunity to show that value operating within your environment before you move forward with it. Because the risk is, otherwise you're going to spend money on something that isn't going to work,
right?
Or heaven forbid, make things worse,
right?
Okay, shift a little bit. I definitely want to hit this. You have been in your position for just over 7 years. Yes,
correct.
That position has expanded. I think you came in just as a CISO, yes, or something?
Correct. I was hired to be the first chief information security officer at General Motors Finance.
Excellent. Well, congratulations, by the way.
Oh,
7 years coming, right?
Yeah.
But that role has significantly grown. Can you talk me through, and our listeners for sure, because I think part of the challenge is, you get somewhere, maybe you're the first CISO. I'm the first CISO at my company, right? How do you take that role and then expand it into what is, you know, because I know it didn't fall into your lap, right? Correct. There was a method to that madness. So you now have a lot of things. Can you go over the things that you're now over, and how did that happen?
Sure. So I'll start with what my remit of responsibility is today. So again, started out in 2017, January of 17. With responsibility for cybersecurity. That then grew to include...
Can I interrupt you there?
Sure.
Who did you report to at that time?
The CEO.
Okay, the CEO. So you were CEO from the beginning?
From the beginning.
Okay. Was that something you had a decision point in, or was it that's how it was?
That's a really good question. So when I was approached for this role, I was asked how I think it needed to be structured. And again, I was consulting director at PwC in their consulting practice. I'd seen a lot of different security organizations. I'd even operated in other security organizations.
Right.
So the plan was for me initially to report to the CFO. Interesting. And I was very much a proponent of that. I thought that that would be a good alignment. And during the interview process, the CEO said, I'd like you to report to me. So wasn't expecting that to happen. It was the last interview that I had. And the CEO said during that interview that he would like me to report to him.
Same CEO today as then?
Same CEO.
Correct. please go ahead with your current responsibilities.
Yeah, sure. No problem. So cybersecurity in 2017 was then promoted and given the opportunity to run enterprise resiliency as well. In addition to that, again, promoted after that to the opportunity to be able to take on personnel security and safety, as well as operational sustainability and global real estate. So a few different functions, and really, I think, shows beyond the tech and tech risk, as well as that resiliency piece, really broadens over into operations more. So everything from global real estate to the personnel security and safety of all of our team members across the world, right. As well as the operational sustainability, environmental related matters that impact our company. So that's what it grew to. Now, stepping back for a moment, you know, one of the things that was important to me in my career move when I chose to leave PwC was I wanted to be in a growth, I was in a growth mindset. I wanted to be in an organization that had a growth mindset. And I was very fortunate because GM Financial was a client of mine. And I you know, that to use a car euphemism, the try before you buy or drive before you buy, they sort of got to take me for a test drive for a few years before I was offered an opportunity to come on board. And so with that, knowing that they were a growth mindset organization and a very forward-thinking organization, and that they had a huge growth trajectory in front of them, that was very attractive to me, and I made that clear. So I think setting expectations and understanding that as a CISO, that you also have a growth mindset is really important. But then you have to perform. Then you have to execute. Then you have to build consensus and partnerships and all of the other things that you would be expected to do as a successful CISO. And as opportunities came along, it was offered to me that we're trying to solve for something here with enterprise resiliency as an example. Not just tech resiliency, but the ability for the organization to be resilient from major disruptions. Those disruptions could be things like COVID,
right,
or a global pandemic. Those disruptions could be a major, you know, ransomware attack. Those disruptions could be things like a major competitive disruption, you name it. So things that could impact the operational sustainability of our company. Accounting for and thinking through and coming up with plans for that was a unique opportunity. And when we talked about at the highest levels of GM, the need to be able to do that, I didn't immediately step forward and say, I want it. I listened, heard everybody talking about it, and I could see the conversation shift towards me, and I accepted it. And I said, yes, I think that I could do this and do this effectively. And I immediately went to, here's what I'm going to need. And the organization was supportive of that. So if I take that mentality and that approach, thereafter it became, Ryan, you know, obviously positive feedback from a performance perspective. Obviously, have you been able to grow and inspire a team and develop people, build the partnerships, drive executions and outcomes that are successful, accountable for those things, all the things that you would expect to have done. More opportunity came along where it was, hey, Ryan, we'd like to have you do this as well. And in certain cases, it was, Ryan, you've been successful being able to run a really complex organization that has to solve really complex problems. We believe that those executive leadership skills are transferable to other problems as well. And David, you know, you and I have talked a little bit about this. How many times in your career have you seen a COO become a CEO or a CFO become a CEO?
Quite a bit.
I mean, that's not uncommon at all.
Right.
Very few people are born into the position of CEOs besides founders.
Right.
So oftentimes they come through that finance apparatus. They come through that operations apparatus. I've even seen them come through the general counsel's office to CEO. It all depends on what the needs are of the business at that point in time. What I would say is that just a few years ago, you started to see CISOs, CISOs maybe take on the role of CIO.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen CIOs take on the role of a CISO.
Yes.
So you started to see that transferability happen. I think what you're starting to see is the evolution of a CISO as an executive who has executive leadership skills, who has the technical and business acumen to do other things besides that of a traditional CISO. And I think that that's a really good thing for our profession, because I think it's a credit to the work that CISOs have done, you know, really across the board, but I want to see it happen more.
Right. So does that mean I need to run out and get my MBA?
I certainly don't think that's a bad thing to have. But I think you need to look at your organization. I don't think there's a, you know, going out and getting an MBA, with all due respect to MBAs, I have one. To me, I feel like that's taking a check the box approach to things. I think what you need to do is run out and look at how can you provide value? How can you provide value beyond what you're doing today? How can you help other people be successful? How can you help drive value and drive success for not just the people that work within your organization, but help accomplish the goals of your business partners and fellow business executives? I think if you can do that, you become the type of partner that other business executives want to partner with, and you're going to be in that orbit. And I think in the right type of environment, you can say, I'm happy and I'm humbled to continue to serve in this role. I think I have other capabilities and I think I have other interests as well. When the timing is right and the need arises, I'd like to be able to have that conversation.
Yes. Excellent. Love it. Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed our time. We're not quite done yet.
Oh boy.
So it's time for 10 questions.
Okay.
They're not necessarily rapid fire, so you can provide some context, but typically we kind of flip through them a little bit. So, if you've listened to the podcast before, you know the 10 questions. So we get to humanize the side of this with Ryan Bachman. I love the conversation so far, so I'm really looking forward to this.
All right.
What is your favorite word?
Favorite word? Family.
Family. Love it. What is your least favorite word?
Irregardless.
Sorry. Love it.
Drives me bananas when people say it.
Oh,
it's not even a word? It's a word.
I don't think it's a word.
Okay.
I think it got added later, honestly, because so many people started saying it.
Yeah.
And that's not a good thing.
All right.
I'm a traditionalist when it comes to that. So totally agree with you. That's why I laugh so hard, because that's an ongoing thing in our family for sure.
Amen.
What area of your work do you find most interesting? I think we have a good context, but I would love to hear it succinctly.
Area of my work that I find most interesting is the strategic side of evaluating the impact that my functions have on what we're trying to accomplish as a company, but also learning from my colleagues and peers on how their areas impact strategically what we're trying to accomplish. So I feel like I've got a very good command of my area. I could probably sit down any one of my peers and just shut up and listen for hours to them talk about what they're doing, what their challenges are, how they're going about it. I find that fascinating.
Love it. What area of your work is the most challenging for you?
The first one that I go to is, how do I continue to be able to retain the best individuals? And I'll say this because I've recently had some turnover in the higher ranks of my team.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of like we were the band. We were the ones that kind of started building this.
Yep.
And your first reaction is a visceral reaction of, oh, I can't believe they're leaving this. I can't believe they're leaving us. Like,
right.
I thought we had something here, right?
Like we had great tunes, man. We had some hits.
We did. And then you realize that they're getting to go do some pretty amazing things. And they're the ones who had to tell me this, that this was a critical chapter of their career.
Right.
That without it, they wouldn't have had this awesome opportunity. So it doesn't take long to be happy for somebody for being able to go do the things that they want to do. but it's hard to let go,
of course,
of something that you know was special and something that you know was really, really good. But it also gives you energy to know that now there's people who get to step up and shine and get a chance to grow their own career. So it's equal parts really hard and equal parts humbling and gratifying because you get to see people that you got to be a part of that journey for them go on and do awesome things, sometimes bigger and better things.
Right. Agreed. What sound or noise do you love?
Oh, that's it. I mean, it doesn't matter where I am. My kids are now much older, but every time you hear like a small child laughing or giggling, it takes me back to those years when my kids were at that age. And I still get to hear it every now and again, even though they're 17, 15, and 12. But there's nothing like, you know, we were at Easter services and there were little kids and you'd hear the giggling and the cackling and it's really hard for that not to bring a smile to your face. That's a great sound. It's the best sound.
What sound or noise do you hate?
A baby screaming or crying. it gives me immediate anxiety. So, say I hate it, like, I mean, I don't hate it, but it drives me, it's anxiety inducing.
Yes.
It's truly the antithesis of the giggle or the cackle of a little baby.
What's your favorite curse word?
I'm going to have to defer on that one.
Not a problem.
Unfortunately. Understood. But I got to keep it clean here.
No worries.
All right.
Understood.
We'll wait till after the recording.
I'll.
All right.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I always thought that it would be really, really interesting to be an ER attendant, just the variety of things that you would see of people coming into the ER, obviously with major problems.
Right.
Now, life-threatening problems as opposed to technical problems,
right,
business-disrupting problems. But I always thought that being an ER attendant would really be a fascinating job.
What profession would you not like to do?
Oh, boy.
This is not an indictment on anything. It's your personal preference.
Yeah. For me, I wouldn't want to do what I would call financial reporting, the rules of GAAP, the particular ins and outs. I've got very good friends that do this for a living. I've got an amazing team at my company that does this. Just for my temperament and having dug into that stuff before, that would be brutal for me.
Understood.
I don't have the patience.
Understood. Believe me. Okay, final question.
Yes.
If heaven exists, what would you like to hear your God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Welcome home.
Welcome home. Okay, well, gang, we covered a lot. So I think we covered quite the maybe philosophy maybe around the CISO role a little bit.
Sure.
I would say development side of things. I would say how do you grow your brand inside. We talked a little tech, which I also liked as well. Innovation. I think that's a big thing for CISOs. I think that gets kind of sorted out or pushed out a little bit. Nobody gets fired for, hiring the big company type idea. And then we talked a little bit about what was your journey and how maybe you would do more responsibility, right? Bringing on that, don't just be a CISO. There's other areas that you may be able to, other areas that
you can make a meaningful
contribution, take responsibility for. Thank you.
Absolutely. Wow.
So, colleagues and friends, I renew the call. It is time to professionalize the role of the CISO. Until next time, I wish you health, happiness, and success on your journey in becoming the professional CISO. Let's do this.
We're professionalizing the CISO role, so please subscribe to the Professional CISO Podcast.